serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. I wish we had more time today with 91-year-old Jack Gutman of Anaheim, California. Maybe you'll catch him at one of his ongoing stand-up comedy shows. But if you pick up his book, One Veteran's Journey to Heal the Wounds of War, I do have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, you'll know it was no laughing matter when this veteran of the D-Day invasion arrived 11 months later at Okinawa to start tending to casualties of that massive Pacific battle.
In Okinawa, it wasn't like Normandy. On the beach, there wasn't that much problem. In the inner deals, like with the caves and all of what they got, see, the soldiers and everything went in. I think a good picture that people should see today or get it is Hacksaw Ridge. I was there when the Hacksaw Ridge was going on at that time.
Right.
But I was on the beach taking care of the wounded. And, Paul, we lost 14,000 men died. 62,000 wounded. It was horrendous. It was like a mess. I never saw anything like it in my life. And then the worst things of all that, with all of Okinawa, you see all of this again on top of what happened already. This is an 18-year-old guy seeing this, a kid. And then all of a sudden, when I went back to my ship and we're taking care of the wounded there, I'm taking a break. I'm walking along the deck, and all of a sudden, just when I happened to be near this big gun that was on the ship, all of a sudden I hear an alarm go off, and then all of a sudden I hear, boom! I felt a ring in my ear. I lost half my hearing on that thing. This is another incident that got me. Never forgot it. There's a picture of it, I think, in my book. I saw the kamikaze planes coming in. They were Japanese kamikaze planes. These are young men, 17, 18, 19 years old, that had one third thing. They got in a plane with a bomb on it, and they go one way, and they're going to go and crash into a ship. And I had never seen this before. My job is to heal people. Paul, I actually saw this. It was the battleship New Mexico was like a football field away from me, from my ship, the buoy. And I'm running to my station, and I look over, and I see this Japanese kamikaze plane come real low. I could actually see his, you know, that stern look that they have. And then all of a sudden, he veered the plane and went right into the bridge of the battleship New Mexico. I stood there stunned, and I said, I just saw that man alive, and now he's dead. And look what he did to those people. I had never seen that before. My job is to heal people. And here, someone takes his life. Never saw that. Today, you got people blowing themselves up and all that. But at that time, no, that was traumatic. It took me a long time to get over that thing here. So it was just, the kamikaze planes were just constant. Now, I understand there was about 4,000 of them, and 10% got through. The lot got shot down. But that 10%, of which would be about 400, hit a lot of ships, a lot of lives lost, and it was just a horrible mess, you know. And then after the Okinawa thing, and we went back, and I figured, okay, there's two invasions, I'm back, maybe now. We got a five-day leave, and then we loaded up again, and we're on our way with a huge armada to invade Japan. Our base was going to be Sasebo, Japan, which was the naval base there. I'll tell you something, Paul. There's a picture I think I have somewhere in there where it shows a ship going into this, and on each side there are big hills with caves, and we had to go into this thing. We would have been like ducks in the water. We're on the way, and they dropped the bomb, and all of a sudden they said they dropped a bomb on Hiroshima, then Nagasaki. We said, oh, boy, then they're going. Then they said, continue on going. Then they dropped the Nagasaki, and they said the war is over. So we said, oh, good, we're going to go back to Pearl Harbor. They said, go in to your landing place that you were going to go. So we went in. Thank God. When I saw this, and I saw those cliffs, and I figured we were going to.
When you got to Sasebo and you saw where you came in and pictured it, if the war were still going on and where the Japanese positions would have been.
We would have lost thousands and thousands. The Japanese, I saw what they did in Okinawa. They will fight. They hadn't lost a war in 1,000 years. And therefore, those people were fighters. And they were also told by the homeland, don't come back if you lose the war. So a lot of them committed harikari or killed themselves rather than go back or surrender. And so these people in Japan were going to be fighting to the last man or woman or child. And I, when I speak at different groups, I always tell them, I want you to think of something. Had the Japanese not surrendered, there was a man named Mitsubishi, and Mr. Sani was a kid there, a young person, who finally wound up developing televisions and all these electrical things the Japanese had. Plus, there was a whole bunch of Americans that lived that didn't have to die in that battle that invented a lot of things that we are now enjoying.
Good
Think
point.
How the world would have been changed, how it would have been changed. So I said, very good. When we hit that beach, they were waving to us. So we took over. We stayed there for, I think it was a month and a half. Mm-hmm. And then our ship later took us back to Pearl Harbor. We loaded up other people that were sick people or whatever it may be, back to San Pedro. When I got to San Pedro, I got a five-day lead, and I still was having all these flashbacks. And then finally I get back to the ship, and we're leaving in the morning to go back to the Pacific for 3 more months. They had an all-nav bulletin there, and it said, if you got 31 points because you were overseas, you got so many points, but you can be discharged. I had joined for the duration of the war, almost went for 4 years, but I took the duration of war and I wound up 2.5 years, you see. I had 33 points, and I went over to the yeoman, and I said, hey, I got 33 points. And he told me, you're full of crap or something like that. And I said, no, check my record. So when he said, he called and he looked and he called the captain and says, Gutman's got 33 points. He says, get him off the ship now. So my shipmates helped me pack, and they give me the captain's dinghy to go into San Pedro from the ship, you know. So they give me their, they didn't know what to do with me. I gave them the papers, and they said, we don't know. We got to get your other papers ready for the discharge and your trip home and so forth. So they gave me a 24-hour pass and gave me some money. So I went to Los Angeles, and I had a nice time. When I come back, they had my ticket and everything, and then they said to me, have you ever been wounded or anything? And I said, no, because I said, if I tell them about the flashbacks, they're going to keep me. And I wanted to be home. It was December. It was near my birthday. I said, no, I'm fine. No problem. And so they gave me it. Otherwise, they would have held me over. I was got home for my birthday and was home for Christmas. I had missed 2 Christmases already, you see. I was with my family. Everything was great. I was discharged. I thought everything would be great. But then I had started having those flashbacks, and it scared the heck out of me. It was just all of those sights kept coming back to me and all of them. Finally, I didn't want to say anything about it. I went in the show business. I was a comedian. I wasn't too interested in God. A guy from the orchestra. Orchestra men are wild. They got groupies that always want to go with them and everything else, and they live a wild life. And he sat next to me. I was having coffee in between shows. I did some risque stuff when I was in show business. And then he said to me, Jackie, do you know Jesus? And I said, yeah, I know of him. And he said, you ever accept him? I said, no. He said, would you like to accept him? I said, no. And he said, why not? And I told him the truth. I said, because I got these pet sins I'm enjoying, and I don't want to give them up. And he said, are you kidding? And I said, no, I mean it. I don't want to give them up. He said, why don't you accept Jesus and tell him you'll accept him as your Savior, but tell him you got these pet sins that you don't want to give them up. If he doesn't want you to have them, let him take it away. Now, that was a challenge to me. And I said, okay, and I said it that way. Once I said it, and then all of a sudden, he gave me another little Bible thing. And the next thing you know, I started to have to change some of my material. Just things changed. I finally made a decision. My life, I've never looked back from there. I've never been happier. And it's made a big difference in my life now. Now my years now is I want to touch lives. That's all. That's why I did it with my book. And when I speak at something like that, the money aspect is not what I'm interested in. The thing is I want people to know that they can go through such hell and all. The post-traumatic stress was my thing that I carried on, and that was hard for me, and I carried it 66 years.
What finally changed? What
I destroyed my marriage. I almost lost my wife. We almost got divorced because of I started medicating myself with drinking heavy. I'm not ashamed now. I want people to learn that you could go low. I was sitting with my family on Thanksgiving, and I had been drinking a lot of wine and champagne. And when he came to set the table, I passed out my face into the plate in front of my whole family. It was a traumatic time for me. But my daughter Paula, she handles grief and people with alcoholism and all, and she talked me into going to a grief thing and then also to go to AA. So I went through those things, and her deal helped me a great deal in her grief. It was like a 12-week course, and I found out what the root of my problem was, you see. That got me out of the alcohol thing, and then finally I decided that I was at Veterans Hospital, and he asked me, "You ever been wounded?" And I told him, I said, "I'll tell you the truth now. If you want to put me into some mental institution, I'm just going to deny everything. But I've been having these flashbacks," and I told him. And he says, "You got post-traumatic stress." I never heard of it, you see. Then he said, "I'll line you up with a deal." So he handed me up with a therapist, and there's a guy named Dylan Bender is the name. First I saw a psychiatrist, and then I saw Dylan for 3.5 years. He took me back, and it was so traumatic for me. After I finished my first session with him, he said, "Well, these are big melting cubes, Jack. You'll have to melt them down, and then you'll be able to talk about it or write about it or do anything." Because, see, I got to the point where I would never even tell anyone I was even in the Navy. If a guy started talking about war, I'd change the subject. Or they said, "Weren't you in the service?" I said, "Yeah, I was in the Navy." And then I make a joke or do something else. Mm-hmm. And I kept striving to not go into a depression, but to better myself. So I excelled in a lot of work and things in show business. I did well in sales. I did well, but I was having that problem. But once I went for the therapy, I went through 3.5 years. Finally, I got to writing things down about when I was talking to my therapist, Dylan. Boy, he was a godsend to me, that man. I still see him occasionally. Finally, I decided to write the book. They put in for the pension. They said they were missing some of my papers. And then one guy says, "Yeah, I don't know if you really qualify." Well, after about 6 months of going back and forth with this, I blew up and I wrote and I said, "Who in the hell are you to tell me I don't qualify?" I wrote this all out. Do you know what it is to see guys dying in your arms and screaming, "Mama, mama," and see body parts? Do you know what it's like and all that thing? Well, don't ever. And so I wrote it all down, and I went and saw Loretta Sanchez, the congresswoman. I showed her my letter, and she said, "We're going to help you." And then she wrote to them, and they found my other papers. I had already gone through financial problems. It's all in my book, and I still wanted to touch lives. As a matter of fact, I had a situation with a friend of mine named Steve Gonzalez. He called me one time when I'm in a rough spot, and he said, "Jack, could you come down to Pasadena where I'm at? We can talk and pray about things." And I said, "Steve, I got 16 cents to my name and a quarter of a tank." He said, "You come down, I'll fill your tank." That's when gas was running about $3.50 or something a gallon. It was high. He filled my tank. We had breakfast. We talked. We prayed. And then he gave me $20. Well, honest to God, and I've put it in my book, I was heading home. I couldn't stand it. I pulled over, and I cried. And I said, "God, I don't want to be a beggar anymore. I want to be a giver." A couple of weeks later, we were on food stamps. I mean, that's how low things got financially, the things got. And I was getting food from the food bank. That couldn't be lower. The phone rings, and this guy says to me, "Mr. Gubbin, I'm from the Veterans, and just wanted to tell you that you've been approved." And he gave me the percentage, which was high. And he says, "And you're going to get X amount of dollars every single month from now on." Well, it was like a godsend. Paul, I tell you, it was like, I can't believe he said, "No, I saw your record. You deserve it." It was like God had just rained it down on me. Our financial problems was over, and I finally wrote the book, and my whole life has changed. It's been there. So now I touch lives financially if I can do it, or spiritually I'll do it. I realize what some people did for me. There were people that touched my life. That food bank, I send them a check every single month. It's my way of reciprocating.
And with regard to the book, did you write the book for personal catharsis and closure, or?
Actually, both. It helped me. I wanted to express what I was going through, the good and bad, and then let people know that they don't have to go through a war. They don't have to go through all the stuff I went through. People go through it with marriage problems and everything else. When I speak at some groups and their couples, I tell them this. We spend so much time thinking the grass is greener on the other side. But if you would water the grass you got, you'd be surprised how much greener it would get. So give love and you get love back. Pretend your spouse is like a cup. Fill it full of love, and all that overflows is yours.
I guess you've been practicing that for a few years.
Oh, yeah. My wife and I, we just finished celebrating June 22nd, 70 years together. And it was up and down, and only God took care of that.
And if there's anything else that's important to you, feel free to share. I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us your story so candidly and for writing it down in this book, One Veteran's Journey to Heal the Wounds of War. It's one veteran's journey. It's your story.
Yeah.
But you know as well as I do, it's a parallel journey for so many veterans.
Absolutely.
And I get the sense that's another reason you wrote this book, to help them.
I plead to you veterans that are going through post-traumatic stress or any problem due to war or whatever it may be, get help.
Such an important message, and it carries so much weight when it comes from someone who has walked through it for most of his life. If you'd like to hear more from Jack, there are additional stories from his time in the war and after, and even some more marital advice in the extended podcast version of this episode, which you can find at hometownheroesradio.com. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded once more through these stories from our veterans that freedom is not free.